This is Unregular Radio.
You got an organ going there. No wonder the sound has so much body.
What's up, everybody? This is Experimentally Ill AM on UnregularRadio.com. It is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. My name is Mike O'Toole. What a hearty way to start your morning there with Lawrence Holly. And, let's quick rundown of special
that
stuff.
That was the whole train ride over.
Is it already cold season because the temperature changes?
What the fuck? It's an infirmary
ups and downs. When it goes from starts very, like you said the other day, it's starting to get that weather where it's chilly. It's hot in the morning and chilly at night.
It's blazing hot in the morning and then it's fucking like free. It's desert temperatures now.
Yeah, I hoofed it into the fucking subway and
I saw that.
Yeah, it is a story where, well, at that, first of all, at this hour, at the earlier hour in the day, I'm not used to being a day walker.
No,
so
me neither.
At the earlier hour,
that's two of us.
Yeah, if you don't get a primo, if you're not in there, in like Flynn, as they say, if you're not in there, man, and you don't die for a seat, you're standing the whole fucking ride. And
Pretty much.
So I was sitting, and then there was an older gentleman who looked like he was struggling. He was like grabbing. Now they added they instead of the poles and stuff, you can grab where you can. That's a germ fest happening.
Oh yeah, never grab those.
Coat yourself in a bodysuit of Purell right in the subway these days. But if you grab that pole,
Purell.
I go through a lot of Purell.
It's our
buddy
DL
Polanski.
We're making fun of him.
Yeah. He's
on to something though.
Imagine him on the subway as a germaphobe. But anyway, you're grabbing the pole, and now they have those straps you can grab. They look like they just insert. Like, let's add some extra straps, and so you they're like pieces of a seatbelt or something. And you can grab them. So there was this older guy grabbing the straps, looking like he's in he's in the Christ pose. You know what I mean? Trying to hold on. So
I think he's doing it to just be dramatic. some sort of visual
thing.
Yeah,
it's like John McClane. You know how Bruce Willis always ends up hanging off an elevator shaft?
Yeah.
Or you have to be hanging from something. But there were no explosions behind this man. He was just looking, he was kind of... And he would look like a lovable guy. So I said, excuse me, sir, want a seat? And he's, oh, thank you very much. And people have given me... their seat before, and you feel a little guilty. No. But, you know, then you're like, look, man, I do have a long ride. I'm going to take it. And the other day that happened to me, too, where somebody gave me their seat, and I took it, and then, like, instantly in, like, two stops, a pregnant woman gets on the T, and you have to give your seat up then.
Right.
Excuse me, mind if I sit? And you have to. But this time today, we were rolling in, and it was on Express anyway. And so they were rocketing through. Everything seemed to be delayed. And... This older guy who happened to be in a wheelchair, right? He's got that red, sort of the dark brown, the flag.
You
know, how he would have a flag on his bike. But he has this orange flag on his wheelchair. And he goes, stop it! Stop the train! And the driver's like, look, there's another train behind us. We're on Express. We're running behind. I have to get to the hospital.
Oh, sorry.
You know, he was a curmudgeon. And so all right. I could think of is, look, man, yeah, it sucks. You're in a wheelchair. You're an older guy. It doesn't give you carte blanche to be a jerk. You know what I mean? Help each other out.
If you pulled that, the whole train would have been against you.
Yeah. You know, who is this fucking dick? But he wants special service. Especially, just show a little bit of patience. The driver said, look, man, there's a train right behind us. You know, wait 2 minutes. No, stop the train. I got to get... You know, he expects the entire train to stop.
All life must end.
Yeah. And... So it was rough, man.
Hey, I got some good news aside from that. Did you know that the FBI thwarted another domestic terror threat?
Is there any connection to the Tamerlan Zanaya?
No, this guy, Buford Bucky Rogers, 24-year-old.
It sounds like a comic book name.
Bucky, Captain America, not to be related to the Captain America.
And then Buford Tannen from Back to the
Future.
Buford
Tannen. Another, what's
Tannen's
with the Bufords,
relative.
Dude? Anyone with the name Buford, you run screaming.
You're instantly going to grow up to be evil if you were given that name.
He's the founder of the Black Snake Militia.
Oh. Shit.
That sounds like a
That's
comic
a comic book,
book
name. That's like Cobra.
Iron Man versus the Black Snake.
The Cobra Commander?
Cobra Commander.
That's all kinds
Which
of
Which had anti-government tendencies. Yeah. What other tendencies would they have other than anti-government tendencies?
You'd have to if you're named the Black... What is it? The Black Snake Militia?
Authorities discovered a cache of weapons, including a Romanian AKM assault rifle, several Molotov cocktails, and what investigators suspect to be pipe bombs.
Oh, it's always the pipe bombs or the pressure cooker bombs.
And there's more!
Uh-oh.
Now, this guy isn't a terrorist, but this should make you feel good for any wannabes out there who don't have access to guns. You can make your own! The world's first gun made almost entirely with a 3D printer has been successfully fired in the U.S.
Well, we're trying to get rid of these bombs, right? These weapons. What do you do? People are concerned with how people can like counterfeit money and stuff, and that can be a crime. You can just run it off on your printer. So what's going to happen?
So what do? You rob yourself? Like you print the money and then you make it's called the Liberator.
Yeah.
And it's produced by Defense Distributed.
The point is, what's going to... When you can just print off your own weapon. So do they fold it out? You know how you could, print off maybe those cubes or something? You know, you cut it out, and there's a special way to fold it together?
Right. At first, I thought, did they fucking learn how to do it with, like, paper? But no. It's plastic. It's pieces of plastic.
It has to be some sort of a... it can't just be, like, printer paper in the printer.
No. It's a barrel, trigger, cartridge, and so on. It all can be bought without a license. The caveat with it is that the barrel it gets destroyed after a few uses. So we're in the early stages of it.
Yeah.
But the fact that anyone can do this, Liberator, they'll be liberating you of your life.
Maybe we shouldn't like share this information, but I am curious to know, like, what website do you go? What file sharing service do you go to get the? You know, the JPEG of the gun to...
as Kevin McMaster would say, Mike,
Our old friend Kevin McMaster.
So, it isn't like it's a totally new problem, because I guess back in the 50s... My singing gag in the 50s... No, they would do it... People would make guns with wood, antenna housings, and elastic bands, building zip guns to shoot at each other.
So this is like the 21st century version.
This is the 20. So this isn't a necessarily new problem. It's just that they can do it more accurate now.
Yeah. I mean, so now it's easy to get weapons. Here's this thing. Today in the Metro, I don't know if we were talking about taking the T earlier, and they got this thing today in the Metro. A warning to T commuters. Don't touch the driver.
Oh, you saw that too.
This has been a thing. That we're talking about too, how, you know, not to spread the paranoia, but just to explore the idea that, you know, perhaps we are edging toward more of a police state of sorts. And you always see in RoboCop, or I just watched the remake of Dredd, you know, Judge Dredd, I Am the Law, where it becomes kind of where people realize, look, man, people are fucked, we gotta put our foot down. So my thing is, look, remember... they had the guy who was the general manager of the tea, come, hello, this is so-and-so, blah, 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 if you see something, say something, and it's a happy little greeting. Now they're over, like, the loudspeaker, it's pretty much, look, dude, don't fuck with us, we'll find you. They don't say don't fuck with us, but they pretty much say, you know, don't lay your hands on the driver, we will find you. And that was kind of, they threw away all tact there. So it's got this, it says, in the Metro today, T attacks. Transit officials said they will prosecute riders for assaulting workers. In response to an uptick in violent attacks on T workers, the MBTA yesterday rolled out a public awareness campaign to discourage unstable and irate customers from assaulting employees. Now, we talked about the guy in the wheelchair. Obviously, being in a wheelchair, being an older guy, he's going to have difficulty perhaps physically assaulting people, but just gauging his temper there, you know, you can see how, for whatever reason, you know, the T's not running on time, whatever. People get pissed. It says there have been 28 attacks on T workers this year, said Joe Presario, a T spokesman. Attacks include one that involved a mob of teens pummeling a bus driver in Dorchester. MBTA General Manager Beverly Scott recently sent a letter to T employees about the effort. I want you to know how deeply troubled I am by several recent brazen attacks on our employees in the course of them doing their jobs, and to let you know that we will not sit by idly and let these egregious acts go unanswered. Scott wrote in the letter, certainly getting assaulted is not part of any T employee's job. So, and it just goes on to say, after a recent rash of driver assaults, a new ad campaign on MBTA buses warns riders not to attack drivers.
Mike, you've been mad.
It's an entire campaign to say, you know?
You've been mad before on the bus. You know, it takes long, but you never so much that you're going to attack someone.
No, and a lot, the thing to remember is these guys who are driving, you know, men and women, you know, they're doing their best to keep things rolling. A lot of times it's if one little thing gets off schedule, you know, you're crunched for time. And they're also a slave to, like when you're on the T, you know, a slave to waiting for the next train to go in front of them. You know, nobody can make the world move, you know, at their feet. And the fact that now people are getting violent and stuff, which you would think, okay, maybe once in a while it'll happen. The fact that... again, it's kind of like with the terror threats popping up. You figure if now it's out in the mainstream media and we, like, regular citizens are hearing about it, probably means that there's been even more. You know what I mean? They got to a point where they realized, okay, we have to go public with this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when they say a group of teenagers pummeled a driver...
Now, that's not a terror assault. That's just a bunch of morons.
But it's almost like
too
domestic... I mean, it's... Well, yeah. But it is a thing, and it kind of goes back to... I kind of think there should be... and maybe I'm in the minority with listeners or something, or those people who are like not, you know, oh watch out, you know, police state. But, you know, for the most part, I think police officers, public officials are out there, you know, to
you know,
help
Mike,
us.
You know what? You're saying all this. And you know, this would be a good conversation for our buddy Jeremy.
Oh, yeah.
He could really chime in on this. Well, we'll have to call him about it later in the week.
Yeah, Jeremy Riss of AlienScientist.com. He pops in with us from time to time. He pretty much debunks sort of the more far-out conspiracy theories going on. And but what I was going to say is kind of, you know, I think there should be sort of an up, you know, a larger presence of security and things in these matters. If you think you're one bus driver and you have all these fucking anonymous strangers getting on, most of them unwashed, let's be honest, you know, who the walking wounded of the city. And, you know, most people are great. But there's that one time, I mean, you're one driver, and you're piloting this huge vehicle, you know, all it takes is somebody to go batshit.
Yeah, you're just a public servant trying to get people around. You know, you're waking up at god-awful hours, going to hellish places in Boston sometimes.
Yeah.
The last thing you need is to be accosted as if it's your fault that the train isn't moving fast enough.
Yeah.
The damn things are on a schedule, and even though I ranted and raved about how much I can't stand how slow Boston is yesterday, which it is...
but, like, what can the drivers
do? No, even I'm not going to... I understand.
They literally... it's got on the bus...
I get
The ad, it's a blue background, right? So happy blue with... don't touch the driver. They don't even like come up with a creative slogan.
You will get fucked.
Yeah, they don't even. That was the draft version in the meeting. They said, we will fuck you. But they said, we can't use that. And then it literally has a white person's arms here in handcuffs. So police state anyone? I don't know. You know, I'm of two minds of the subject. I'm just, it scares me a little bit because, like we said, we would never do that. But you have to ride the bus with these same type of people who apparently are doing this. So I don't know. But let's.
Where's Iron Man to handle this, Mike?
Well, yeah, maybe we can get into Iron Man again a little bit
later.
You
know, if they can make like 3D replicated guns, when are we going to get the Iron Man suitcase?
The full suit?
Suitcase one, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, we can just strap it on. Well, that's the next thing. You always wonder, like, why, even police officers and stuff, why not just wear like body armor?
Like, fuck it. Yeah. Do the whole RoboCop thing at this point. Why do cops have to be under-armored and, like, you know, these assholes are running around with, like, pipe bombs, pressure cooker bombs, and like, even body armor. The dude in Aurora had a full SWAT team body armor suit. Remember
this
the Joker guy?
Attack. Oh, yeah, the Dark Knight
Rises
guy.
The Dark Knight murder.
Yeah.
He came into the theater fully armored, like, face mask, body armor. I think he had a shield with him. I can't remember that part, but I know he had the full body armor, and he's tossing like gas grenades while he's using like a machine gun. What the fuck?
Well, that's why I say, I mean, visually, it might, as a citizen, it might look extreme.
Fuck
but
that.
It's like, I don't blame him.
I wouldn't. I mean, honestly, you know, at this point, It's not going to make them worse. See, I think people think it's going to make them worse. Like, oh God, it's going to look more military.
Well, they're going to be like faceless. Like, you're going to be like Judge Dredd. I always wonder why, if you're going to wear armor and a bulletproof vest, why they don't wear full face helmets.
No, they're not.
You know what I mean?
They're still going to be fucking lawyers.
Yeah.
So cops aren't going to... And cops aren't mindless beasts either. Unless you think that we're a police state-sponsored show. No, I'm just open-minded enough to argue both sides. Yeah, they can be pricks, too.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be running around just mindlessly beating people like in, I don't know,
no.
some but the, but cyberpunk
stuff. No, I mean, there have been cases of... There's always going to be... A few bad apples spoil the bunch, Larry. There's always been shit like that. There's been several, black dude's, like jaywalking and gets like beaten down by a cop. This was a former WWE wrestler, actually, wound up on TMZ.com, talking about this. Nothing to do with that he was a wrestler, but that's kind of made press. There's been several instances of, police brutality, things like that. But now we also have citizens acting brutal. So that's just a part of, I'd say, human thing, not a cop thing, as DL would say.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, this is Experimental Eel AM. Check us out on experimentaleel.com. Check out all our old podcasts. Find us on facebook.com/experimentaleel. I'm on Twitter at Mike O'Toole. Lawrence is on Twitter at Lawrence Harley. LawrenceHolley.
Check me out on YouTube at youtube.com/captureman.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, you have one. You have a YouTube.
Yeah, I have youtube.com/MikeO'Toole. I got MikeO'Toole.net. And we have an Experimental Eel Twitter.
Just before you go on, what do we do on those YouTube pages? Describe it for the audience. What can they see there? Why would they want to go there?
Yeah, well, you can find links to a bunch of stuff on experimentaleel.com. But one of the things that we have done is we've done some music videos for our buddies in the band. They're now known as All Echoes Return, formerly Mid-Atlantic. And previously to that, they were known as the Bleedin' Bleedins. And we play some music from those guys. We should have, I think I put some of that in there today. And you can find music videos, some of our old cable access shows. I did a talking show, a spoken word show called Solipsist Dispatch, which we Lawrence and I won an award at the Alliance for Community Media, the Northeast region for that a couple of years ago. Stuff like that.
I did the now infamous video, Go Truck Yourself.
Yeah, my uncle, Barry O'Toole.
For Barry O'Toole,
yeah.
Back in 2000, won an award for that, even though it looks like horrifically dated in the 80s.
VHS.
It was
a
lot of work.
But let's get into some of the special stuff for today's show.
Lots happening.
Yeah, later on, we're going to try and... We gave it a shot the other day. We're going to try to catch up with our buddy Goth and Grindhouse extraordinaire filmmaker John Hartman. I think he's in Carolina now. He comes out to Denver, but he's a Boston guy too. And he's been in our film festival, and he built the Goth robot. And he's gonna release the film Dr. Gothenstein, which you and I actually acted in, Lawrence.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be the big thing to promote. And we also have Lisa McColgan is gonna be calling in at quarter to ten, and she is a musician.
Quarter to 11. Mike.
And a performance artist. Sorry, quarter to 11.
Yeah.
But she's the featured call-in, right? So what is that girl's
she's,
behaving?
Bad Girls Upset by the... She does this music act called Bad Girls Upset by the Truth, which is it's a tribute act to another writer. My brain just totally crapped out.
Yeah.
But it has other Boston musicians in it. Anne Frank is in it. I went to see a great show, but she's also a writer. As cool. Well. Lisa's also
so
a
writer. So it's lisamcolgan.com?
When I get my brain screwed back on about the facts and whatnot, we will regale you. Lisa will regale you as our guest.
She also did something at the Huntington Theater, correct?
Yes. So we're going to find all that out.
Profiling the artists of the Boston scene. Check in with us mid-morning, of course, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And, we got lisamcolgan.com.
That's the woman who originally did Bad Girls Upset by the Truth from Austin, Texas.
So she's
Jesus,
a part of that?
Lawrence.
How do you spell Lisa McColgan?
It is, if you want to look up her work,
yeah.
It's one word, lisamcolgan.com. It's, her last name is MCCOLGAN. Great writer. I've been reading her stuff lately.
Nice.
On our website, so creative. Check it out.
So yeah, if you want to check in with us throughout the show, the new call-in number at Unregular Radio is 617-206-1050. And we're going to be inviting you in to our world here. This is, like I said, May 7th, 2013. I think it's probably the 11th or 12th time now we've done the AM show of Experimentally. I'm trying to keep track.
It's all one big blur, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Teacher in high school, Mrs. McCarthy, said throughout the week when we had to get there at 7:45 in the morning, she goes, "It's one long day with many naps." And so I always think about that as slobber is, spewing from my face as I rocket through on the subway.
Ugh.
And as you just exchange germs with everyone,
like some commuter rail riding zombie.
You're just a piece of a slab of human beef, just like stuck on this rocketing tube of dirt and grime.
Hey, Mike, have you ever done this? You see someone from your past, in public. They haven't quite seen you yet, but they're a pain in the ass. And you got to disguise yourself.
Did you, put I had to do that to your face?
I couldn't believe it. It was like Mission Impossible getting on the train today. Without getting into too much detail, giving you plenty of it, was... I used to be a street preacher many, many, many years ago. I won't go into the group and all that. But some real judgmental a-holes were in this group, and I've long since left it. And while trying to get onto the train today, I couldn't believe I saw one of the worst of them was at the Alewife station.
Yeah.
And I see him walking through the streets while I'm driving there, and I start hearing the Mission Impossible music. Because I saw him there the other day. I'm like, fuck. And then sure enough, he's there, and it's handing out the magazine. So I had to craft an entrance. I came in another way. I had my windbreaker on and my sunglasses.
Yeah.
I'm walking so my back is kind of facing him without looking like a crab.
Yeah.
It's all this strategic stuff just to get under the train.
I try to, I'll see even people I kind of like, but you just don't know what to say.
I don't want
to
talk.
You haven't seen them for a while. You're not sure if it's them. So I'll see somebody. I'll be on the train. I remember I was going to Improv Boston, and I was going in on the subway, and I'll kind of see somebody, I'm not sure, and then I'll come home to a Facebook message. Oh, I saw you on the train today.
Well, they
won't say hi. But yeah.
Hey, so. Mike, we can dump the songs a little early, can't we? Just to let you know.
Yeah, we can. I was trying to. Big Nez was in the facilities earlier, so I
got a couple. The songs that I've added today, I'll just let you know when you get to the blank spot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We were talking about Aerosmith the other day, and they're going to be playing they're going to be playing that one fun show.
Ugh.
That's going to have they have Dane Cook, the comedian, which is kind of the oddball, Sufi, to support. That show coming out on the news channels now, sold out in 5 minutes. So, and there's no other way, no scalpers, no other way to get it.
So,
going to see Aerosmith. And because we talk about comics and shit on here, Spider-Man, I got the Aerosmith doing the Spider-Man theme.
Spider-Man.
Yep. And then after that, I don't know what else we have.
We have When Harpo Played His Harp by Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers. It's actually between Spidey and...
cool.
Never Gonna Stop.
And after that, we have... Rob Zombie with Never Gonna Stop to perhaps amp you up in the AM.
So let's do it, Mike.
Yep, let's do it. I am Mike O'Toole. That is Lawrence Holly. This is Experimentally Ill AM.
Spider-Man does whatever. mystery. All the laughing stopped. Back to the balcony. Chico, Chico, Charlie's. Now let's watch him shoot the keys. When Harpo would play his harp, all was still. Well, if someone else can
Howdy, boys and girls. If you need an affordable band room in the Boston area, look to the Sound Museum Rehearsal Complex. We will and we shall beat any price in the Boston area. For info, go to soundmuseum.net or call 617-423-4959. 617-423-4959. We are celebrating 30 years of Boston Rock Madness here on Unregular Radio.
By an overwhelming vote, medical marijuana is now legal in Massachusetts. In conjunction with a team of Massachusetts pain management doctors, a brand new evaluation center is now open, conveniently located on Comm Ave in Brighton. Appointments are filling fast, so please call 800-557-5699 or visit thcevaluation.com to learn more or to schedule an appointment today. That's 800-557-5699 or thcevaluation.com.
This is Unregular Radio.
You got an organ going there. No wonder the sound has so much body.
What's up, everybody? We are back on Experimentally Ill, the AM edition.
Yo.
Check us out on experimentallyill.com. You're listening to unregularradio.com. It's Radio Transformed, live from downtown Boston, Massachusetts. My name is Michael Phelan O'Toole, a.k.a. Mike O'Toole.
Phelan O'Toole.
That's our buddy DJ Benny. Ben Appel is a big radio guy.
And I'm Lawrence Hawley.
Yep, Ben Appel was from Emerson College. He was at WERS. He's like one of our true diehard fans.
Yeah, from
following
the
all the legacy from your Random
like
Act show.
2000.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And he came to our art gallery shows, and he's listened to, I believe, this stuff or seen some videos. And
ran into him randomly at another radio station once. It was totally.
He saw you at the
wacky
Whole Foods, right? And he's like, hey, you're that guy who does that show.
Yeah, this was back in 2000, DJ Benny, Ben Appel.
Yeah, Boston people. I just want to preface. Boston people might know him from, he was on WERS, okay? He hosted 88.9 at night, their hip-hop show.
Right.
And he's like this kind of, husky Jewish gentleman. And but he's very into the hip-hop. You know,
yes.
not the typical demographic, but he's spinning the ones and twos, doing the DJ thing, too. So
he was working the cash register at Whole Foods in Newton way back in 2000, and I just see him staring at me. This is when I did my public access show, Random Acts, which is like a weird performance art show. Weird performance art. I see him looking at me, and he's like, you do, and he talks like with this motto, you do that show, you're a Hawley, Lawrence, Larry Hawley. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, he's like, my father and I watch you.
Yeah.
So, hey, Mike, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
What about other people's work, such as Lisa McColgan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a whole Boston art scene that we aim to pull the curtain back on. And, we got Lisa McColgan.
Pull the curtain back
coming
on?
Up. Yeah, but you know how, like in a theater,
yeah,
it's like a theater or like a showbiz, the showbiz curtain.
I think
curtain
of a dressing room curtain.
So a dressing room curtain, that's right. If you want to see our dicks or our asses, that's how you're gonna pull it back.
Dick.
The idea is, you know, it's a slice of life here. You know what I mean?
I don't want to see your dick.
I don't like that expression. Rocking the straight. Remember how he was like?
So typical.
I said rocking the sunglasses about Eric the hot dog.
Yeah,
dude.
He doesn't like.
If you had a mental patient on, you could say you're rocking
like
the straight jacket.
He doesn't like your hip speak.
Yeah, but he doesn't know. See, we already do have a mental patient on as a guest. We have him. He's not here today, which is great because we can talk about him and not be interrupted by puns.
I will be in tomorrow. All right, hey, let's do the dramatic
phone
thing.
We're going to check in with Lisa McColgan, performance artist, musician, writer.
Calling her right now.
Yes.
Performs in Bad Girls Upset by the Truth.
Mm-hmm. And you saw the show as Goth Robot.
I actually went as Goth Robot.
Wearing the full trash can suit, which is interesting.
Hold on a second now.
An alter ego situation.
Yeah, it was I gotta say, doing that is it's pretty liberating dressing up as
Well, like you asked me the other day about mask robot. Acting. You know, mask acting. When you completely submerge and cover your face, it really lends itself to being a whole other person, a whole other being, you know. And anytime Goth Robot can get it in the public, I'm sure John Hartman is a fan of that type of thing, spreading the virus, spreading the realness. And we'll be checking in with him later on as well. And so it's this whole thing that, you know, we've had our little Johnson the Press, local press.
Yeah, and now you know,
doing this stuff.
In the Goth Robot suit, man, that's as close to, like, wearing the Iron Man suit.
I was going to say, it's like the
it's
early
the old
Iron
school
Man.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a definite, it's like being in a walking fish tank.
Yeah.
The thing is a friggin' commitment and a half.
Yeah. John's like the.
But I love it.
John's like the artist, like Tony Stark is a, would you say, like a scientist or a technician there, you know? And, you know, solves problems through mechanics. John Hartman, sort of the artistic version of that, he solves these problems through realness.
Real.
And builds these things for a purpose of filmmaking. But, you know, I don't know if the suit could have special functionality.
Sure.
You know, like shooting missiles and stuff. The Goth Robot is out there to spread groovy art house love is really what Goth Robot is all about.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's that level of positivity and, frankly, insanity that we champion here on the Experimentally Ill radio show that we've done. And that's what we did on our Sunday show. And we continue to do in the AM, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., right before the Big Nez show there.
Yeah.
Right after, I'm sorry. After the Big Nez show.
The Big Nez show. Yeah, we were...
And DL was on the Big Nez show the other day.
Wait a minute. We have a caller.
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, it's Lisa.
Lisa.
Hi, it's Lisa.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This is Lisa McCullough. Thank you. And this, I got my my buddy host, Mike Phelan O'Toole, here.
Hello.
Lisa, writer, musician, actor, performer. I mean, what... Oh, God, no. What... You're like the Buckaroo Banzai of entertainment.
It's a renaissance woman.
What else you got going? Do you do brain surgery like he does, Buckaroo Banzai?
No.
Does
no.
she know
I'm
that movie?
I'm a database administrator, though.
Okay.
What would say that again? I heard administrator.
I'm a database administrator.
Database. Is that for the Huntington Theater? Can I say?
Indeed.
So, now, I went in a... I mean, Lisa McColgan, Bad Girls Upset by the Truth,
mm-hmm.
Area Show. It's a performance... Based upon the music by Joe Carroll Pierce.
Correct.
Of Austin, Texas, right?
So it's a theater piece?
Now, how did you... I didn't go, but my friend Goth Robot went.
Yes, I was delighted to see Goth Robot there.
Yeah, he loved your performance. He recorded it for me legally so I could hear it later. And how did you get involved with the Bad Girls Upset by the Truth?
I got involved via my friend Ad Frank. He had seen Joe Carroll Pierce years ago when he was down in Austin for South by Southwest,
mm-hmm.
and had seen her perform and fell in love with her as anyone who meets her invariably does, and had heard this recording, Bad Girls Upset by the Truth, and had been pretty obsessed with staging it somehow for a long time, and... we finally did it, we did the performance this past December, but we did an earlier performance last spring at the Somerville Theater, and we've just been kind of working on it and having it evolve from there.
It entailed UFOs, Virgin Mary, religious topics, Tourette's syndrome, mental illness. I mean, those are just the encapsulated. What can you give us the story by your account? Like, give us your version of it because I'm butchering it.
Yeah.
No. You're actually nailing it. It's sort of a experimental Christmas pageant in a way, or that's certainly the way we tried to have it go down. She did do a more realized. Theatrical version of it, and I think it was performed in D.C., but this was many years ago. And there was additional dialogue and fleshing out of additional characters, but we decided that we just wanted to take it straight from the actual recording.
I see. Now, are you guys like the official like torchbearers of the act, or are there other bands performing this throughout the country, or does Joe Carroll Pierce do it? What's the story with that?
As far as I know, we're the only ones that have put it on in its entirety in quite some time. I don't quite remember when the stage version was. I think it was in the late 90s. So we're the first one, certainly in the New England area, to pick it up, and she was just tickled to death that we were doing it.
So there is a narrative to the story. Is it just a straight musical all the way?
Oh, there's a narrative. There's a lot of dialogue. It's semi-autobiographical, obviously. I don't think she's actually had any contact with UFOs.
Okay. You never know. You never know. We've had a UFO guy on the show, so.
Conspiracy theory.
It's semi-autobiographical, and she, I just like completely lost my train of thought.
No, semi-autobiographical, sans UFOs.
Yeah, about her search, the ongoing theme throughout the piece is, what are these boys for, and what am I supposed to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
And so she, it's the pursuit of the answer of that question, and it leads her to, the UFOs, and running into the Virgin Mary at the HEB, which is a Texas chain of grocery stores that we were pretty I sort of became obsessed with the whole West Texas thing and the HEB, and she's really just the most charming person I've ever met, and just so weird, and she really didn't come into her own as an artist until she was into her mid-40s. So,
oh, wow.
I found that pretty inspiring myself, being in my early 40s.
Well, I'm pretty much there myself, and I've often lamented to my buddy Mike, who's nestled squarely in his mid-20s. I'm like 39 and sweating it, but there's no reason to sweat it, because we have so many friends of ours. We'll actually be talking to Joe. Would he be mad if I... No, he wouldn't.
What, John Hartman? John Hartman. No, he would love this.
John Hartman's a filmmaker friend of ours, one of the most inventive local filmmakers that we know. And he's the young age of 47, cranking this stuff out. I think that sometimes you bloom later in life.
Yeah, John actually sort of tapped into the whole... He tried some acting stuff earlier on, but he's only been doing this for the... filmmaking stuff for the past 10 years.
But that's nothing to sweat, so I'm there.
So I'm just trying to get a read. This is, it's kind of a surreal hero's journey. She starts in one place.
Now, this isn't your first rodeo as a musician.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Can you describe some of your other work as a musician in the past?
Sure. I have a background in mostly theater, when I came back to Boston after being down in Florida for undergrad, and I came back up here just to move back and to go to graduate school, I became involved in the underground theater scene that was going on here, and I was in a group called Catbox Cabaret for years. Had a home base at the Cantab Lounge in the basement for quite some time. So it was a lot of, sketches and music and drunken theater that was really exactly what I needed at that time, coming from a very traditional theater background and being able to really express myself in some different ways. And, it was a really inspiring scene to be around at the time. There was Catbox Cabaret. There was another group called Guilty Children. And that was a lot of fun. And that sort of moved into my involvement with Boston Rock Opera.
Cool.
Yeah.
So can you explain about Boston Rock Opera?
Yeah, Boston Rock Opera for years was it was a great meeting of the minds between the local music scene and the local theater scene. So you would get people who were in bands who'd never done a play before, or people who, like me, who'd done a lot of theater and hadn't had a lot of exposure to rock musicians before. Mm-hmm. And so we would do a lot of we would do the shows that you'd expect. We'd do Jesus Christ Superstar. But, they'd also branch off into, lesser-known pieces like Ray Davis' Preservation. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. It's no longer really exists. It kind of It kind of went on indefinite hiatus, but that was also a really inspiring time to be involved in that sort of thing.
Now, Lisa, this to me, this sounds like the legendary cool stuff that you read about. You know, Boston, we're like, how do you find all these? How did you get involved in these things? Was it word of mouth? I mean,
how? Just meeting the right people. It's just having, you know, certain people, you know, kind of come on onto your path, and you just say, okay, I'll follow you for a while and see where this takes me.
See where the road leads.
Follow down the rabbit hole.
Now, I was staying up late last night, among many, and I was reading lisamcolgan.com.
Ah, yes.
And I was reading some of your passages on there. One of them that caught me, among many, was structure.
Mm-hmm.
How emotions, let me see if I get the gist of this right, because I go through this, is how emotions and memories can be tied to a place.
Yeah.
But that place itself, the place itself doesn't harbor any ill will. It doesn't have any feelings at all.
Mm-hmm.
Supposing, can I talk a little bit about the details in the story, or is that?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, it's up there on the internet for anyone to see.
Because you mentioned the House of Blues, right?
Right, right.
And it was an old flame associated with the House of Blues.
Yeah.
And he kind of went his own way, you went your way, and things didn't quite pan out.
Smashed my heart all over hell and back, yes.
But when you went and returned later, you realized the House of Blues is just a building. It's just a facade.
Sure.
It itself doesn't harbor any ill will, nor is it a generator for any bad karma, good karma, or anything.
It just is.
It just is. It was that, I mean, were you, like me, I associate, I mean, the city of Boston itself, I've got so many memories here growing up here, good ones, bad ones, that sometimes I blame the city for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mike heard me rant about that on the show yesterday. But it's just a city. It's what you fill. It's like a glass. It's what you fill it with.
Right.
Was that something that, I mean, is that something that you're working out still? Or, I mean, what's going on?
You know, when I write things like that, it's just stuff that just occurs to me at the time. And, you know, certainly, you know, I was out in Los Angeles visiting my best friend. And you know, we were on Sunset Boulevard, and there was, you know, the House of Blues, and this building that, you know, I sort of blamed for, you know, the end of this relationship. And, you know, you just sort of think about it. It's like, well, you know, it's not really the building's fault that these things happen. You know, it's just about memory, and you know, because I also spoke about, you know, when my parents sold the house that I'd grown up in, and you know,
you sort of feel like,
well, is the house going to miss me? You know, crazy things like that. But you know,
I was going to say it made me think of what's the difference between, as they say, what makes a house versus a home. You know what I mean? It's just a structure, but you associate this sort of home base thing, all these memories, these people.
Not sure.
Really just a building, just the same. Yeah,
it's just time and place. I mean, I grew up in Watertown, the scene
right.
of the recent terrorist attack. But I grew up there, and every so often I go by my old house. You know, I see the new occupant. I'm not stalking it in case these people are listening.
Yeah.
I see a creepy van driving by.
No,
I go by, I see the trees I used to play in and the yard and everything else.
Right, right. Well, it was weird because the house that I grew up in is up for sale. And, you know, you can
there
see
you
pictures of it on the internet. And you know, the people who had bought it from my parents had done some, you know, fairly significant changes to the inside. And, you know, so I'm like obsessively looking at all the pictures, like, oh my God, that's my bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my God, there's
right.
my brother's bedroom. And you know, like, you see, you know, what they used to be. And it, you know, it, and you have to just sort of accept that, like, it's somebody else's home now. It's somebody else's, you know, memory sponge.
Right.
I got to say, it's almost like you're reading my mind, because another passage was the dead. How the dead don't remember. The dead don't remember us for very long. Taken
right,
from our
that's
town.
From Thornton Wilder's Our Town.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think of my grandmother who died not that long ago. And I like to think sometimes that, you know, does she miss me as much as I miss her and all that other stuff? But the thing is that time moves on, people moves on, and you gotta cope. I mean, what was your drive to write that passage?
Well, like we said at the beginning of when I first called in, I work at the Huntington Theater Company, and we've done this really extraordinary production of Our Town. And you know, it's a play that a lot of people have to read in high school or junior high, or they see, you know, a high school production of it. And just there's, you know, the line, you know, you and I both know that the dead don't stay interested in us
yep.
living for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it makes you sort of question your importance. You know, just, you know, how important are you?
Right.
You know, and of course you're important, but, you know, in the grand scale of things, you know, you're a blip like everybody else.
Because mm-hmm. The funny thing was, and this is going to sound really weird, like a night before that, I was calculating how far in advance, like, you know, different years, like different far future years, how far away they are from now. And I'm like looking up like the year 3025, you know, subtract 2013. And I'm just like, Jesus, like you just realize at some point you're finite and you just wonder what you will leave behind. Or if any of your life force resonates at all. That just when I read that, it was like it married that earlier thought. So
yeah, I just want to tie that in too about being a writer and an artist and stuff. I write some stuff too, poetry, prose poetry. I feel like talking about sort of these structures, a building is just a building. When you write a piece of writing, you're so and you're so like if it's an emotional thing, something triggers it. You're so in it, you know, as you write and put together these thoughts and everything, and then you can kind of go back, you know, a few months later even, or a few years later, and it's sort of this roadmap of where you were at that time.
I
don't know if it can bring up those old feelings. Sometimes it's not the same. Sometimes you have to be in that moment with it.
Right, and it's funny you bring that up because another thing that I'm involved in is a project called Mortified.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've heard of that, right? Is that the bad teenage poetry and the journals and things?
It's journals, poetry, anything that you created as an adolescent. And
there you go,
know,
yeah.
You
I wrote a lot of poetry.
And share it.
Yeah, there you go.
No, Lisa, just we're going to go to a music break, and we're glad we had you on. Is Mortified, Bad Girls Upset by the Truth, what aren't you doing? Where can people see you coming up?
I've always got a presence online at my website. I also write for a writing collective. The website is called 5by500.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great poetry and prose up there. As far as, you know, when you can see me, I'm also in a B-52's cover band.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Bikini Whale. And so we have a website and a presence on Facebook. I think we're playing North Shore Pride at the end of June. So that would be up in Salem. So, you know, big wigs and witches and lots of gay people. It'll be fun.
The Rock nice. Lobster.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Rome Where You Want To? I remember those songs. Songs of
yeah,
My
yeah.
Youth. Yeah. Lisa, thank you so much. LisaMcColgan.com.
Yes.
Sweet. I'll definitely be checking in. That's
all right.
Really cool. Hope our listeners
so
do too. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I love your work.
No.
Thank you for doing
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving
Bye-bye.
Me the night reading. Bye now.
Thanks. That was awesome.
Rose, I read it, man. I'll
definitely be checking in with her, man. I want to get into that
night.
That Mortified, that whole
multifaceted
that whole scene.
And multi-talented.
There you go. That's when they go up and they, yep, it's all supposed to be from, like, when you were a teenager. Like, you know, journals, the bad teenage poetry cliches. That's why I wrote a lot of my fevered poetry. I can't talk to this girl, so I'm going to go home and tell my journal.
What do you do when you're writing bad poetry in your mid-20s?
Like crying while masturbating.
Yeah, biting the lower lip. Hey, Mike.
Hey, coming up on a break. I believe we have You Just Don't Understand, appropriately enough. From our boys in Mid-Atlantic, and then I don't know what is next.
A Top Secret Man by the Plastics.
And then we have Skulls by the Misfits. And we will be coming back after that. This is Experimental AM. I am Mike O'Toole. That is Lawrence Holly.
Yo.
And we'll be checking in with filmmaker John Hartman from RealGroovyFilms.com. That's R-E.
By an overwhelming vote, medical marijuana is now legal in Massachusetts. In conjunction with a team of Massachusetts pain management doctors, a brand new evaluation center is now open, conveniently located on Comm Ave in Brighton. Appointments are filling fast, so please call 800-557-5699 or visit thcevaluation.com to learn more or to schedule an appointment today. That's 800-557-5699 or thcevaluation.com.
Howdy, boys and girls. If you need an affordable band room in the Boston area, look to the Sound Museum Rehearsal Complex. We will and we shall beat any price in the Boston area. For info, go to soundmuseum.net or call 617-423-4959. 617-423-4959. We are celebrating 30 years of Boston Rock Madness here on Unregular Radio.
This is Unregular Radio.
You got an organ going there. No wonder the sound has so much body.
Give me all you got. Give me all you got. Great ass.
There you go. Okay. This is Experimentally Ill, AM edition. Check us out on experimentallyill.com.
Uh-oh,
we got a moron. Yeah, hey, experimentallyill.com. Is for us, and if you want to check out, you know, if you're interested, you want to check out the podcast of this show, that'll be up in a little bit, and, you know, but also just check out unregularradio.com. As you've said, it's radio transformed, uncensored, and unregular, unregularradio.com.
Lauryn Hill, by the way, Mike.
The singer Lauryn Hill. Yeah.
Remember her? Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
I do, that was a big album, right?
That thing, that was the song.
Yeah.
She gets 3 months for failing to pay taxes. $1 million
I know. I don't get this. Wesley Snipes also, as an actor, didn't pay his taxes, and is he still in jail?
No, he just got released. Okay. He's just released.
I just wonder, do you have...
He just got released. It's horrible.
As DL said, you can't get to these celebrities, capital T-H-E-S-E, capital C.
Wow, she's got weird eyebrows. I'm looking at a picture of her. Like, it's shaggy. Waxing them. Gigantic. Otherwise, it wasn't bad. That's too bad. But we wish her the best.
I was just wondering, though, if they don't have people, accountants, lawyers, things, you know, handlers, to say, pay your taxes. They can't just go to, like, H&R Block and get it taken care of.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a little plug there.
I mean, yeah, for crying out loud, we just did an ad, and I didn't even need it.
Right?
Holy crap. Well, guys, we're looking for sponsors.
Yeah, we're looking for sponsors, and if you want to be a part of Experimentally Ill Radio and the whole experimental scene, and you want to be part of Unregular Radio, you know, you can contact us directly, experimentallyill@gmail.com.
Right.
Yep. And we got a Facebook, facebook.com/experimentallyill. I'm on facebook.com/Mike O'Toole. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike O'Toole, Lawrence Holly, EXPILL, that's the Experimental Ill Twitter. The other entertainment news thing is that... is, I guess, American Idol. The ratings are finally, you know, after 12 years, whatever, finally starting to slump. And so Simon Cowell left the show.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Paula Abdul.
The chick, Paula Abdul. Yeah.
She's still hot.
But yeah, she was kind of a flake there. They were saying, is she drunk? Is she... I'm sure all these people have bipolar disorder or something.
I think she definitely does.
But anyway, so they're switching in and out these guest, you know, celebrity judges now, instead of just the regular music personalities from behind the scenes who were in the music world, who were just big personalities. Like, they had Cowell and Randy Jackson. We talked about the other day. They plugged in Steven Tyler from Aerosmith in there.
Yeah.
Did that for a while. And now they got Mariah Carey in there. But the only guy who seems to have job security with this thing is Ryan Seacrest.
Hey, Mike, if they keep going like this, they'll have DL on the show.
I know. Well, because what they're trying to do, instead of, you know, I guess...
DL Polansky.
Fame trumps all. It's not about just having big personalities play off one another. The latest thing is they're talking about for, the upcoming season is they're going to have Justin Bieber, Pink, P. Diddy. They were trying to get Diddy before, but he asked for too much money. And now I guess they're willing to pay.
You know who they'll never get? You know who they can never hope to get because he's way better than them is John Hartman.
That's true. I want to see John Hartman do a...
We got him.
Do a music filmmaking montage of
stuff. We'll give him a ring, Mike.
Yeah, we're going to check in with filmmaker John Hartman. and
checking in with John Hartman, right?
Creator
now.
Of Goth Robot.
Yeah, the Goth Robot suit which I wore to Bad Girls Upset by the Truth.
That's right.
Fronted by Lisa McCauley. Hello.
Hello.
It is John.
Yeah, brother. You're on regular radio.
Oh, it is John Hartman.
Hi.
How are
I'm
you?
I'm sitting on the ground.
Yes, yes.
I'm not on the radio at all.
You're on the ground?
Where?
I'm on the radio.
I don't know. I'm lost already.
Filmmaker John Hartman, latest work, Gothenstein, yeah. Bride of Gothenstein, which I was in, which Mike was in, and a whole cast of others. John, your film work goes back many, many moons. We're so glad to have you on again.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So what do you have going on now, John? What are you doing? Are you working on a film? Are you going to be putting out are you going to put out Gothenstein? What's going on?
Yes, I intend to put out Gothenstein. That's my intention. God knows what will happen. You know how it is with starving artists. You do what you can.
Yeah.
But apparently the footage, the actual 16mm footage for Gothenstein came out looking as German expressionistic or as noiristic as I had hoped, according to the lab.
Mm.
Nice.
So far, so good. I get the footage in about a week, 10 days,
okay.
And I will post some images of that, and hopefully things will work out kind of well, because I don't know if you guys remember it, but there wasn't a very, very developed script for that. It was kind of mostly done, but not entirely done.
Well, that's... John, that's the third eye filmmaking way. Am I right? Where you just shoot from what you feel?
Yeah, you're right. Of course you're right. Whether or not I have a complete script or even an outline, it doesn't really matter, because when you're on the set and you're all dressed up, right, and all the props are in place and you're actually in character, certain things occur to you that would never occur to you at the on the writing table, right? So a lot of the dialogue goes out the window, and sometimes even an entire scene will go out the window in lieu of something more interesting that occurs to somebody, maybe a cast member, maybe me, maybe somebody else. And so that's kind of how I roll. But I think if I had to choose, I would probably have a complete script just in case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I usually don't have that. But this time I did a little better. It was almost complete.
Mm-hmm. I remember for that shoot, it was in the rain, that shoot. So I don't know if that sort of inspires a sort of being more on the fly, you know, what that experience was at the zoo there.
I only caught about half of that.
Ooh.
So what Mike was saying is we did that scene in the rain. Remember at the...
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was that seemed to me like something that was inspired... on the fly, based upon an idea that you had prior to us getting there.
Yeah, it was by the bear cages, right? And there were syringes around there.
In the bear cages.
Yeah,
in the bear cages.
There you go.
So how much was...
by the bear cages.
How much did you...
We were in the bear cages.
How much of that was improvised that day, that particular scene?
I hate to say it, not much. Most of that was already preconceived, but I'll tell you this much. I had been there before. I made a music video for a band called Coyote Cold, which is a local Boston band.
Nice.
And Jamaica Plains, rather. Excuse me. And so I had the vibe already of what I wanted to do. I really scoped it out well, which is not always a privilege as a filmmaker that's usually pretty broke. You know, you don't always have that privilege to be able to go on location and just kind of like wander around and let me collect the ideas. But I had the chance not only to do that, but I had a chance to work there about a week or two before. So that was an isolated case. I usually don't get that opportunity. And a lot of things occurred to me in that prior music video that I did for this band. So that was pretty well thought out, actually. And I'm glad it was, because that was a very rainy day, and we really got lucky.
You know, a rainy day, syringes on the ground. It was
cold.
Yeah, it was freaking cold, man.
And cold, yeah. That was probably one of the more brutal working conditions, I guess you'd say.
Like all day long. And there was only two isolated cases where it stopped raining.
Kind of stopped for a little bit.
For those, that would have shut us down. That the whole film would have been would have been canceled. I don't know. I'd ask some cool footage for a music video, maybe. But if it had not stopped raining those two times, I don't think we would have finished the film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what often what's happened some of the times with your work is what I've noticed is you have the main film, and then you kind of have like smaller projects based off the main film, like ancillary.
Yeah. Does that kind of pique people's interest? You know, trickle it out there. Or, there you go.
Is that intended, or is that like, hey, look, I got this cool footage or this idea. I want to use the same cast and shoot this little kind of B movie, like this little sub, like a sub side project.
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of the two. I don't necessarily plan those things out, but, you know, if you just take along that little tiny GoPro camera that I have,
yep,
and you get behind-the-scenes footage just for the heck of it, just for fun, for nostalgia, sometimes after the fact, certain things occur to me, and then I think, hey, man, you know, if I did this and I just added a little bit more, I'd have another film, and you can do all kinds of supplemental things. So somewhere in between. I don't necessarily plan things. In terms of supplemental footage, like the Gothenstein Gundam style.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that. I like doing Gothenstein. I never saw sort of something that's kind of a takeoff on Frankenstein leading into the Gundam style tribute video there.
Yeah, that was on the fly, totally on the fly. But and that was Z Zarbok, my film partner,
mm-hmm.
mentioned that, hey, you know, these two look really good together, and let me show you this... this craze, this Gundam-style craze, and you could probably just take this footage and make a video, and she was right. So, yeah, sometimes it happens like that. And honestly, when it happens like that, often it's the best thing I have, because that's the most successful of the three films I have so far.
Oh, in terms of views? In terms of views online? Or
In terms of hits online, yeah, it's got like 1,000 views online.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's not the only thing you want to weigh as a factor, but that's...
Right.
Pretty encouraging, you know, when 1,000 people have hit your film. That's pretty encouraging.
Well, yeah, and then hopefully they'll be like, hey, what else, what, you know, what is this thing? You see these people in the costumes,
yeah.
And maybe they'll be looking in on the actual Gothenstein film. And when you say these two, you mean it's Dawn, who's the big sort of Frankenstein dude, and then it's the little girl you had in the film, right?
Yeah, and they dance together, and Frankenstein, he kills his little girl at the end.
Right. Oh,
but we don't have that in this dude.
No, no, not in this.
Do you not know Frankenstein? Of course.
Well, no, I know that. They're throwing flowers into the water, then he throws her into the water because he thinks she's a pretty flower.
Yeah.
But you don't, but Gothenstein.
Probably, but
that doesn't happen in Gothenstein.
No, man. No. This little girl is a little bit older, and she makes friends with the guy because really all he's just a misunderstood zombie type dude.
Mm-hmm.
Who just needs love like everybody else. And when she actually shows him the side of the human being, which is fearless, he lets his guard down and he becomes friends. And oh, well, I can't get away the ending, but I kind of just did, didn't I?
That love lights the way. For
I'm gonna stop talking now because I can't give away the ending.
Oh, yeah.
So now, are you going to sequelize this at all, or do you like to move on to something completely different for your next project?
Only if you're going to be in it, Lawrence.
There you go.
What? If I, John, I'll be in whatever you've got.
Yeah, he has the Goth Robot suit ready to go. We got Goth Robot in. Was in Dr. Gothenstein, too.
Lord gets in character, man. He gets in character, and it's like, whoa, man. He's having too much fun over here, this big ape outfit.
Oh, yeah. You were in the ape outfit, Lawrence, right?
Outfit.
That was for Gothenstein.
With my human head.
That's interesting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lawrence, you have a good resume. What do you call it?
It's a suitmation.
Suitmation. For, you know, those guys who are like the Godzilla type or the Power Ranger monsters who they have the rubber always in the suits. You know
well,
what I mean?
John, Mike and I were talking earlier. I don't know how much of, you know, big, you know, mass market Hollywood crap you follow, but we went and saw Iron Man 3. You know, I don't know if you even care about any of that stuff at all. You're too busy with your
really
own work. I figured as much.
I'm listening.
And but we got to talking that Goth Robot is very much like the classic Iron Man suit, like from the first run of comics.
Yeah.
And how great would it be if you made some kind of, or if a Goth Robot superhero movie were made?
Yeah, that the goth robot suit is like an armor.
Of some kind. Or even if he's like some sort of, you know, monster run amok. I mean, a film focusing specifically on goth robot.
Yeah, a misunderstood, you know, creature or as a suit of armor for a guy.
Because I've got proof positive about goth robot. People love goth robot. Yes, women love goth robot.
That is an icon.
Okay, all right. I kind of like what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I've done shorts with goth robot as the main character, but I've never thought about a feature. That's, see how the intuitive process works?
Planting the seeds.
You've got to get that with the passion, with the juices are flowing, man. I dig it.
Yeah.
And just with goth, you said with goth robot before that you have multiple suits.
Yeah, like Iron Man. Like
Tony Iron
Stark has multiple suits in the new Iron Man film. There are multiple goth robots.
I would say that they're not necessarily different suits. There's some primary components which never change. But yes, there are some exchangeable parts. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could say they're different suits. There's about four. I think four different suits for the four different films that Goth Robot is in. Yeah.
Yeah, you said there's like a smaller one now. You said you had a smaller woman was able to wear like a goth robot style suit.
Yes, yes. That's called Trash Can Warrior, and I haven't released it yet. I haven't even started editing that yet, so I'm falling behind. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you mention that because I just bought a motorcycle, and I haven't really made it public yet.
Cool.
I bought a 1976 Honda 500 double overhead cam, kind of a racy race bike, 1976 race bike.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's not a race bike, but it has double overhead cam, so it's kind of like fuel injection for the motorcycles. Anyway, it's a piece of junk, but I'm still going to, I'm hoping on driving it from where I'm at now, which is North Carolina, all the way back to Denver.
Whoa.
And before I do that, if I can actually get it running well, it's in the process of becoming legal at this point, so I haven't really had much chance to test drive it. But I'm going to make it like a robot motorcycle with a lot like my groovy chopper. If you guys have ever seen pictures of my groovy chopper,
that's like kind of the blue. Is it like a bluish bike? Or
yeah, there's a knight shield on it, and there's a goth robot head is impaled on the sissy bar in the back. And a lot of people dig that bike because it kind of became a Denver icon for a while. My films were not that popular, but my motorcycle was, which is kind of embarrassing.
They go, there's that guy on the bike. I love that. Sort of.
Yeah, there's that one guy again. Yeah, and he makes films. It was always a secondary thought.
That's strange, but iconography that really does pique people's interest. I mean, I like that. I also wanted to ask you, the first one of your films, I think, in the earlier one, that Karma Rider, were you inspired by Easy Rider at all with that?
Oh, Lord have mercy, of course.
Yeah, because it's you on the bike.
For me, was a masterpiece, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, even though Karma Rider was not exactly like Easy Rider, I paid homage to that film in a number of scenes. Just because, I mean, I was totally moved not only to make films from Easy Rider, but to actually drive across country by myself five times.
Nice.
Because of Easy Rider. I really thought that was a great American odyssey. That whole trip, you know, the road trip thing.
Yeah, just that culture, too, at the time. You have these two guys who are, you know, they're just a little different. They're the hippies, and they kind of come into town and get, you know, get harassed just kind of for being themselves, too.
You should do it, Mike.
Yeah.
You and Lauren should be the bikers.
John,
we have our buddy Quincy Briscoe is also a biker. Hook us up.
The thought of just getting in my van and going, I get hung up on the funds. What am I going to do for work? See, I get worried about work. I'm not trying to be funny. I get worried about work. Like, what am I going to do? And this, and I know that's a stupid concern, but you do the thing that really I want to do. You have this way about you that's just, it's freeing and it's inspiring. And I just, how did you get there? Mentally, spiritually,
dude. Let me tell you something. It's not from the money, brother. I'll be honest. When I did Karma Rider 10 years ago, I was broke, man. That whole film cost me $700. I got family and friends to help me out. Mm-hmm. I have a very old used motorcycle. It broke down several times. People helped me, like, fix it on the road. People came out of nowhere, like, wow, yeah, man. I'll take you to my house and you can live there, and I'll fix your bike. And people did this a number of times.
Wow.
So I think the universe really responds well to passion, for creating something that people dig seeing and that they're inspired by. And somehow, when you're doing your thing, when you're listening to your calling, instead of making excuses, you just do it.
Right.
Somehow things work out. The world has a way of working things out, and I'm almost always broke. But somehow I manage to keep going because people come out of the woodwork like, oh, what do you mean you want to go out on the ocean and risk your life with a bunch of scantily clad women doing weird shit with robots? Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, you just kind of fly your flag. That's what I found, too, with experimental ill, getting help and stuff, not to be too afraid to ask for help and sort of open it up and say, hey, you can be come and be a part of this, you know, support the thing.
It's dangerous, though.
Yeah.
Mike,
yeah.
It's really dangerous. The lifestyle I lead is, when I think about it in retrospect, I'm lucky to be alive. I've done so many what would be considered very foolish and reckless things. And, you know, being stranded without any money and no wheels and on a foreign state, especially if you're, like, out in the country, down south, looking the way I do down south, right?
Yeah. Well, I would have
been in the north, in Wyoming. I had people throw bottles at me on my motorcycle. I had guys laugh at me at gas stations once wearing guns.
So do you still
It's scary, man. It's scary.
Tying it in with Easy Rider, I mean, do you still find there are prejudices like that? You got the long hair, you got the beard, and people... Because we're talking about, you know, after the attacks here in Boston, the whole profiling thing, and for us, you know, you look a little different. People start asking you questions. Hey, what are you doing over there? You know, shit like that.
Yeah, Mike, that's not bad. I wouldn't necessarily. You're asking me, right? You're asking me a question. You're not saying, okay, you're asking.
No, yeah. I mean, have you?
I would say it's not exactly like Easy Rider because that was a long time ago. But if you force people to look outside of their own bubble. And you show them something which is free, people often, not always, but the people often tend to get uptight with that because it makes them feel
threatened.
You know, makes them realize how confined their life is, and they get mad at you, and they point the finger at you like, what are you doing?
See,
why are you here?
I look at
why
you.
Why are you corrupting my children with your weird outfit, you know?
John, I look at you, though, and I get just the opposite. I'm like, Jesus, how can I expand? I mean, how can I, what, you know, look at this. Look at what he does with the tools at his disposal. What have I? How have I been blind for so long? You know, and then it gets me going with my film projects and whatever else I want to do. So I want to say, Karma Rider, we together with John.
So there you go.
You are the Karma Rider, and I'm not even. You know, I'm not trying to make a joke. I'm serious. You have spread that enthusiasm that in some darker times I've thought of what you've done in the film and in my participation in that. And it raised me up, man. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. The Karma Rider was designed to inspire people just like you, Lawrence.
There you go. Yeah, likewise, man.
So now what's coming
it's
down the...
It's not as hard as you think.
What's
it's
coming...
It's not as hard as you think. You just have to... You have to be risky, man. You have to follow your passion. Never mind about the obstacles. Just keep going forward. But hey, look, you guys have a radio show.
Hey,
cool.
What's coming down the pipe, John? What's not coming down the pipeline, movie-wise, project-wise? What do you got going on? Anything big, small? What's happening?
Dude, I'm going to make my motorcycle into like a spaceship, man. I'm not kidding.
That's amazing.
I'm going to take my bike and make it so freaked out. I just saw my film partner just sent me a link of the 10 most freaky, wildest motorcycles. And some of them look pretty good. About half of them look really, really interesting. The other half,
not so much.
I think I could even do better. Cool. Not that hard to make a freaky motorcycle, it really isn't. And then drive across the country, and then like do a film like you're this dude from another planet who's trying to find anything which would indicate that the human race has evolved enough to communicate with aliens, and that's your mission. Like you have to find at least one human that's advanced enough so that your plans could work together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the basic idea, that this dude is from another planet and he's in this like spaceship.
Maybe Quincy Briscoe.
Yeah, there you go. he's a biker.
A crap. Yeah. He sees nothing but decadence, and he sees nothing but people hurting each other and lies and deception, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And then finally, right when he's almost out of gas and right when he has to go back to his planet, which means he would have failed his mission. And then there's got to be a ticking clock, like, you know, for some reason he needs communicate with the humans. He needs to hook up with the humans because they have something that his planet needs, right?
Mm.
And so then, like, he's almost out of time. Things the clock is ticking, and he runs into like a guru or a rainbow gathering, or maybe Burning Man. He goes to Burning Man and it's like, wow,
oh, yeah.
I didn't see this before.
This enlightens him into the, this is what the human race has to offer. Peace of mind.
Right.
Peace, community.
Right. It's like another world within a world. So that's, for now, that's my big idea.
Now, John, what if he goes to...
I don't have a script, so I don't know. I mean, I'll just have to wing it.
What if he goes to Burning Man, though, and he finds that it's not what he thought it was? Remember, like, that scene in Easy Rider where he's kind of hanging out with the hippies?
No! You can't do that, Lauren!
I'm sorry. I'm a crazy cynic.
You're throwing off my chi, man.
No. I just... supposing there was a fake Burning Man festival where the government set it up to capture the alien.
There you go. Black ops.
Yeah, it's like a black ops thing. And then you have to do sexy kung fu to get out of it.
That's
come
really
on,
cool.
Let me write with you.
That would be interesting, but let me tell you,
I know.
A scene.
Yep.
That would be a scene which would be very, very hard to iron out.
Yeah, that would be tough. That'd be tough.
I like the idea, though.
It's out there.
That tickles my soul, brother.
You can use it.
There you go. Sexy kung fu.
Hey, John, thanks for being with us again.
Yep.
And sure. Can you plug? You want to plug anything? Should we be looking for your motorcycle on the road when? This new tricked out one.
Hopefully, within a month and a half, I'll be departing here on June 16th. And I'll post that on my website and my fan page. I have a fan page on Facebook. It's realgroovyfilms.com.
Yep.
And that's R-E-E-L, groovyfilms.com.
Excellent.
Nice, man. We'll be checking in again.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, brother.
Have a wonderful day. Nice talking to you.
Cool,
you,
yeah. John. Have a good one.
Later, dude.
Bye.
I got always awesome. Wow, my mind... I'm in the real zone, Mike.
I know, the real illusionary zone. One of his films. If you go to realgroovyfilms.com, okay, R-E-E-L, groovyfilms.com.
R-E-E-L,
Mike. Yep, the first because of the film reel, and it's real, it's freeing. The first thing you'll see there is you'll see a bunch of DVDs. You can pick up John's films for, you know, very cheap. And there's also a donate button. As you said, he's a starving artiste and looking for funds. And
fund his work, man. It's worth it. You'll love it. Real Illusionary Zone.
Yeah.
Bride of Gothenstein. Planet Diva.
Yeah, Planet Diva.
Quests for the Indie Tube. I mean,
this guy is the real avant-garde. The crest of the countercultural wave.
Yeah.
Like us on Experimentally Ill AM on unregularradio.com. I am Mike O'Toole with Lawrence Holly. Yep. We're going to do a break now. We're going to come back and wrap it up. First up, we got Fly Me Home by our boys in the Bleach.
lane, and the women move forward like piranhas in a stream. And they spread themselves before me.
By an overwhelming vote, medical marijuana is now legal in Massachusetts. In conjunction with a team of Massachusetts pain management doctors, a brand new evaluation center is now open, conveniently located on Comm Ave in Brighton. Appointments are filling fast, so please call 800-557-5699 or visit thcevaluation.com to learn more or to schedule an appointment today. That's 800-557-5699 or thcevaluation.com.
This is Unregular Radio.
You got an organ going there. No wonder the sound has so much body.
What's up, everybody? This is Experimentally Ill AM Edition. Check us out on experimentallyill.com. Check out unregularradio.com. We're on Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. I am Mike O'Toole here with Lawrence Holly.
Hey.
Hey, brother.
Hey, man.
And yeah, we just talked to John Hartman. He is apparently building a race of goth robots.
Apparently.
And the next film, he's going to have a souped-up motorcycle, and it's going to be about an alien that has to find human truth, how we can disperse with the conflict.
Kind of sounds to me, Mike, like he's remaking Karma Rider.
Yeah, always his films always have sort of this weird sort of futuristic avant-garde sort of edge to them. Almost, steampunk with goth robot, stuff like that, where it's kind of, or Days of Futures Past, that kind of thing. In The Quest for the Indie Tube, we followed an inventor who had to, find groovy art house love is what he subsisted off of, rather than food.
Yes.
And so he had to find true art, and you know, these BS mainstream movies, things like that, could not do it. But you know what did do it? The personal paintbrush of Vincent Van Gogh.
Oh.
And yes,
give it
art
to
house
me.
Love, give it to
that,
me.
This actor played like a mad scientist in one of John's movies, and that dude, he chewed. I mean, the amount of scenery he ate, he was shitting for weeks, man.
Yeah, there you go.
That dude just chewed all of it.
Talk
it was
about
great. It was brilliant.
Talking to Lisa earlier. Talk about theatrical.
Yeah,
talk about
Lisa McColgan
playing to the back row. We should get these two together. I think that's a match made in heaven.
Bad Girls Upset by the Truth. Lisa McColgan. What's the one with the teen angst poetry?
Mortified.
Mortified.
Mortified is a large. You know, what do you call, like a franchise kind of a thing. And so I'm going to assume, like, she's part of the Boston branch of it. And, yeah, man, the Mortified itself, the overall thing was actually profiled on that Last Call with Carson Daly. Was one of the first times I came across it. And, yeah, the whole gist of it, getting on stage, doing the spoken word thing, and reading writings you did as a teenager. And so
Mike, a lot of alternatives to the big blockbuster movies out there. If you
That's
look
right.
around in Boston, I like what I asked Lisa was, you know, how did you get involved in all these things? Usually these are the kind of things we would hear about.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Yeah, coming from doing our own sort of fringe thing with the Experimental Eel Film Festival, it's just, you know, an unfortunate thing. You know, you're competing with a lot of stuff, and like we, you know, I would put out this press release for the shows, and, you know, you'd get, you know, when the Boston Phoenix was around there, you know, if, you know, what's on the cover. But, you know, Lisa mentioned something about the South by Southwest Festival. Our buddy Rod Weber screened films concurrently with them, trying to pick up on that audience. Wasn't actually in the South by Southwest Festival, but you try to grab that audience. And so we had this piece in the Phoenix, right? But what was on the cover at the time, it was profiling all the stuff going on in Austin with the South by Southwest Festival, and we were having our own little festival of cool experimental filmmakers, meet these creative types, all this stuff. And, you know, we got a picture in the, you know, the little arts film section that's about the size of a postage stamp. So
yeah,
so it's just a reality. You're always glad to get out there and get coverage. One of the motivations for doing this radio show is, you know, you have to get out there and fly the flag on your own. And that's what we do. That's what John does. That was, you know, the origins of Unregular Radio was, you know, trying to provide a healthy alternative to, you know, what was out there
from. You got to be your own cheerleader. You got to get out there and realize that no one's going to come and rescue you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, fame and recognition, it isn't something that you're just going to get handed.
Right.
It isn't deserved.
Yeah, that's something, too.
You're not owed it. No one owes you anything. You got to earn that shit.
Yeah, that's something, too, that's kind of unhealthy, I guess, with the internet culture, where you have these perceived sort of overnight celebrities, where you have people now who, you know, whether it's guys, girls, whatever, who think, you know, because they slap on some makeup or they work out at the gym so much.
Or a nice low-cut tank top.
Yeah, there you go. That they're in pursuit of being famous, being a famous person. But, you know, I knew somebody like this in pursuit of that fame. And they just want to be known kind of as themselves. They're not necessarily putting out any ideas or really creating anything. You know, like John's making these films, Lisa's doing these theater pieces, doing music. We're out here putting these ideas out there.
Make me famous.
Well, DL's looking for his own fame as an artist, but he's also producing art.
He'll be with us tomorrow, Mike. Take us out, dude.
Well, my thing is that, you know, if you're famous for making a sex tape, that's something everyone can do. And when you want to be famous for something anyone can do, it's not really all that great to be famous then, is it? Check in with us tomorrow on Experimental AM. This is UnregularRadio.com. Coming up next, Stephanie Rose with Alternative Rock Radio. We will see you tomorrow.